This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
We are live at the Lost Rhino Brew Pub in Ashburn, where Nats fans are getting ready for opening day and a brand new campaign in Major League Baseball. We are just one day away from Nats game number one at Nationals Park of 2025 against the Philadelphia Phillies. And with opening day looming, thanks to our friends out here at Lost Rhino, we wanted to celebrate the start of a new Nats season and them dropping the Hitting Dingers IPA by having the voices of Nats baseball, Charlie Slows and Dave Jagler, alongside to kick off the season. Gentlemen, the silence is ending. It's time to turn up the volume a little bit.
Yeah, we've been working on ending it for about a month, 6 weeks.
I was joking with Tress Way, so the Commander's punter was out here with me earlier, and we were both marveling. His brother-in-law is Bryce Terang of the Milwaukee Brewers, about just how much baseball is played. Spring training, as an endeavor, I understand, Jags, how important it is to get everybody ramped up. The amount of hours those guys put in and work on the backfields and games, it does seem like they could do a little bit less and probably still get ready.
Well, it's all about the pitchers. That's why spring training is so long, because they ramp up from, you know, one inning now. It used to be you throw two or three innings in your first game. Now it's one inning, and you build up to about 90 pitches. Back in the day, we always like to tell the story, Don Sutton, rest in peace, who used to be one of the Nationals analysts who worked with Bob Carpenter, he made the Hall of Fame 300-game winner. He'd say, well, you know how I knew I was ready for the season? When I threw a complete game in spring training.
Yeah, the Dodgers
if anyone threw a complete game in spring training now, they would fire the manager on the spot. So, I mean, these guys build up to 90 pitches, and they go down to 70, and they'll throw four innings opening day. But it's all about the starting pitchers. For us, the broadcasters, we did 14 games in Florida. I was ready after two. Just give me one rundown play, one double in the gap, let's go.
Because
those games are hard.
Well, it's funny.
Because the fifth inning comes, and then it's the second unit. And they don't tell you the eight different guys.
Oh, yep.
And then Davey Martinez, you know, when it was Dusty or Matt Williams, you know, if you were the shortstop and you went in for C.J. Abrams, you bat in C.J. Abrams' spot. Now the batting order, I mean, you could just you throw a dart flip a coin. You don't know who's going to bat in what spot until they actually come up, so you can't write them in the book because, you know, depending if the seven-hitter made the last out, he could put someone in the eighth spot who's the left fielder, and he's going to bat in the catcher spot. So after two of those games, I'm like, let's get this started for real.
Charlie, you're mid-season form, two games in. Well, how many do you need?
A game and a half of
It's funny you guys say that because we complain all the time. Like, I want more televised spring training games. We only get a couple. It's ridiculous.
Actually, this year they had 9. It was like a record. Or it would have been 9, but we got rained out.
They're calling them from Towson, right? But that's a whole other story. But I want to watch the team, and I want to listen to the team. So while you guys, I get it, you're like, these are tough and a grind. But I want every game available.
I get
to
it. The thing for us, though, the last 2 years really helped us see all of the talent coming in the organization. You know, last year the guys who would be the call-ups from minor league camp to fill out a game and get in the 7th, 8th, and 9th, these are the guys that are in major league camp from the beginning. And some of them, of course, came up and made the club last year, James Wood and Dylan Cruz, a guy like DJ Hirsch, we'd even see him in spring training, or Mitchell Parker. They weren't in big league camp, you know. So it helps us learn the organization and helps us get to know these young players, and they are kind of all coming as a group, and they're dead serious about what they saw as a group to be that next wave of national
players. So let's talk about that, because as we're on the precipice now of a brand new campaign, it does feel like when you talk to certainly Davey or Mike Rizzo, and even now players, the narrative is it's time to stop playing around. It's time to push this thing forward. They are essentially saying the rebuild is over.
Yeah, I heard you talking about this when I was driving in, that you thought, well, maybe this is a little like a year premature.
To me, that would have been my messaging next year. Only because if you're telling me this week, like, we're now here, we've arrived, then you're telling me, okay, it's over 500 and we're competing. I think this is the 77-win season if things go well. Next year is the 85-win season. But I like that the players are going, if you're Dylan Cruz, I'm a winner. I'm here to win. James Wood's going, I'm a star. And so they're confident. I want them to be. But I don't know that the reinforcements that were necessary to kind of put them over the top were added. But I do like the feel of this ball club. They seem to be very much confident that the rebuild has ended.
Yeah, I think Davey wants them to feel like they could go out and beat anybody. If you pitch well, play good defense, I think their offense is going to be better. So don't sell yourself short.
You got to play better baseball, too. I mean, like last year's team, on paper, or at least watching them on the field, I thought was better than the year before, yet they ended up with the same record. Well, why was that? I mean, they made way too many outs on the bases, had defensive miscues. Like, if they play good, solid baseball, I think there's talent up there to make that run to be 500. And if you're 500 with now the six postseason teams in each league, you're in the discussion. You're not going to make it at 81, but if you're at 83, 84 wins, you're in the discussion later in the season. And I think that improvement can be made just by playing better baseball. And for a lot of this, that's what they all focus on in spring training. You know, 27 outs defensively. Don't give anybody extra outs. You know, we want to be aggressive. I mean, this team's DNA is to be aggressive on the bases, but there's a fine line between aggressive and reckless. And too often they went to the wrong side of that line last year. This spring, for the most part, I think that's been better. You know, for 2 weeks, it felt like they didn't make any errors. Then they had this kind of stretch where they made about 6 errors in 2 games and had, you know, a bunch of outs on the bases. It's like, oh, that's the team we saw last year. Then they cleaned it up again as it got toward the last week to 10 days of spring training. So I think if they play better baseball, they're going to be, just by definition, better than last year. Because last year was a step sideways. I mean, they went from, you know, 109, 107 losses, and they win 71. Well, last year you hoped to get to 77. They took that big step sideways. Now you'd like to make that jump. You know, it's easy to get the first 15-win jump. This next 10 to 12-win jump, this is the hard jump to get to that, across that 500 level.
Yeah, and you got to look at a whole season. I mean, they were much better in the first half in every phase, defensively and pitching-wise. I mean, their ERA that was over 5.
How much of that is that they sold off some veterans?
Good part of it. I mean, they got rid of their 2 and 3 hitters in the lineup.
Right. And the two of their top 3 relievers. Yeah.
Right. But even before that, they had started to slide in July, you know, from the way they played in the first half of the year. The ERA in mid-June was in the 3.7, 3.8, you know, and then you took a half of a run up. As far as their ERA was concerned, even before they were trading away people. And your defense slipped in the second half of the year. I mean, when you talk about, like, key players, C.J. Abrams was an all-star. He had a great first half, and he had a miserable second half. He wasn't as good defensively in the second half of the year. I mean, this is a guy, and you got to remember, he's still only 24, right? So, but this is the time at that position, that kind of player, is the type of player who's maybe your most talented player on the field needs to have a full season. And that's the hardest thing about being a major league player. Dusty Baker used to talk about you can have two great months or three really good streaks during the year, and the rest of the time you're just average. And if that's okay, then you've had a good year. But you need a bunch of guys to have those streaks and average times. And, you know, if you have a lot of guys, especially key spots, you know, that fall off, your leadoff batter and Abrams handed him that job last year. And so I think the second half of the year for him was, you know, first half was a step up. Second half was a step, I'll use your phrase, Dave, sideways.
Charlie Slows, Dave Jagler. You'll be hearing them all season long on Nationals radio right here on 106.7. The Fan, opening day slated for 4:05 tomorrow. There's no rain in the forecast, which I thought was against the rules for opening day around here. But it sounds like it's going to be a little chilly and otherwise beautiful, and we are ready for baseball.
I just want to tell people who just saw me take a drink on YouTube. We have liquid death that looks like beer. Liquid death is mountain water that looks like a beer can.
Well, two things. One, I think those waters in the beer cans are the coolest thing in the world. The liquid death. I love those.
Yes.
Two, you are over 21, so you are allowed to be drinking.
Right. But
you don't have to explain to anyone what you're doing.
But I'm doing it on the radio, which may...
our great friend was the late, you know, Bob Uecker, and he passed away in the offseason, sadly. And he, you know, occasionally might tilt back a Miller Lite, you know, but that's, you know, generally that thing is frowned upon. So liquid death, we give two thumbs up.
Well, speaking of Bob Uecker, you were mentioning the base pads and the mistakes last year. So the Nats and the Brewers were the only two teams in the sport that stole 210 bases. And the Nationals stole 223, the most in the major leagues. But they ran into 73 outs. So the 223 steals, unfathomably impressive. Record. Obviously, the rules were changed. It helped them. But they ran into 73 outs. And if you can clean that up and you can cut down on the errors, that's how you're going to kind of around the edges.
Sometimes two on
issues.
One play.
Yes. They had some of those, unfortunately. But how about the offseason? What did we think? What were your expectations going in? And how do you feel like they were able to accomplish some of the goals?
Yeah, I think they plugged some holes. I mean, I think everyone kind of assumed that this might be the year that they went out and signed that Jason Worth contract. There was no Jason Worth contract, but I think, you know, from working at the margins, undoubtedly this team is better. I mean, they were, you know, kind of gaping holes last year in the corner infield. First base was a hole. Third base was a hole. They filled those. You know, DH was not good. You know, you're supposed to designate a hitter. They didn't have very good designated hitters. So now you're hoping that Josh Bell can be that guy. And, you know, right now, you know, the kind of the wild card for this team, and this team's going to need starting pitching. And we talked about the fall off last year. I mean, a lot of these guys, be it Parker, Herz, Irvin, were pitching their first full big league seasons. You know, obviously tough news on DJ, but they have a veteran pitcher in Michael Soroka. Now, Soroka, when he was healthy, was a dominant pitcher. That was some time ago. He's battled a lot of injuries. Changed his repertoire. It's not the same guy. When he was an all-star with the Braves, he was a sinker slider guy. Now he's more of a four-seam guy up in the zone, mixes in a curveball down, and really felt that repertoire changed his career last season as a reliever for the White Sox. His numbers were dominant. A lot of teams wanted to sign him as a reliever. He wanted to be a starter. The Nationals signed him. He came out gangbusters here in the spring, maintaining his velocity, mid-90s, later into his outings. So, I mean, starting pitchers were going for $15 million. Charlie Morton got $15 million. Scherzer got $15 million. Verlander got $15 million. They got Soroka for $9 million, and they got Trevor back for $7 million. So you basically, for those two guys, you've spent on what one pitcher would cost, you got two guys. We know what Trevor did last year. Soroka, if he can be a big win, that could be the signing of the year for this team, if he can stay healthy. He was that impressive early in the spring.
Yeah, he was one of the marquee additions. I would throw into that group Nathaniel Lowe, who they're going to start at first base every day. He's going to hit in the heart of the order. They acquired him for a non-closing reliever in lefty Robert Garcia. Josh Bell is back, who's going to DH every day and maybe air it out to try to hit for some more power because they need home runs after only hitting 135, second fewest in baseball last year. And then if you want to throw in Paul DeJong, who's going to start at third, or you know, they have three relievers they signed in free agency. Of those additions, though, who do you think is going to make the biggest impact in terms of the offseason splashes, if we want to call them that?
Well, I think you'd want it to be Nathaniel Lowe at first base because that's a position where the Nationals have just had a revolving door for several years, not produced a lot of offense from first base. And you can say the same thing, you know, even at third base, they've they've gone through several people the last few years and have not gotten a lot of production out of that. They did with Candelario, came on and eventually netted you a trade that got you a couple of players, including DJ Hurst. But outside of Candelario, that's been, you know, a dormant position offensively. So DeJong can hit for power. He will strike out. He doesn't normally hit for terrifically high average. Right now we're still waiting to see.
He can play third, though.
Yeah.
We hadn't seen him play third before because
right.
he was with a shortstop his whole career. He can play third.
Yeah. I get the sense after just getting back from West Palm, you guys tell me if you disagree, I think he's going to play way more than people think, too.
No, we're not even sure Jose Tena makes the team.
Correct.
If they option Tena, then DeJong's your everyday third baseman.
But I think even
I
if
think
Tena
he is
makes
anyway.
The
yeah.
team,
yeah.
I left West Palm. I should say this. I got there thinking maybe it's a platoon situation. I think like he's going to play 18 of the first 19 games.
Yeah, I mean, look at the last two or three lineups in the exhibition season.
Right.
DeJong was in it.
And one of them was at shortstop. One of the games he started at shortstop in the last weekend. Yeah,
and he's played good defensive shortstop in his career. You mentioned Soroka. The one guy we haven't covered then, because we've talked Lowe and DeJong, is Josh Bell. I had a good conversation with him at camp where he basically said, when I was here before, I didn't have to necessarily hit a ton of home runs because we had guys on the team that could drive the ball. Remember, even though it didn't work out that well, like Nelson Cruz or Soto. And his point is they brought me in here and basically told me that we need some power. Do you think he tries to maybe air it out a little bit?
That's you know, he doesn't have to worry about playing first base unless it's, you know, once every week or two where they give Lowe a day off, play some first base. That's what he's talked about. Not so much concentrating on hitting for a higher average, but trying to, you know, come up in situations with men on base. The thing the Nationals lacked the most was the extra base hit with a couple of men on base, not even the home run. As you said, the White Sox were the only team that hit fewer home runs than the Nationals.
Yeah, and
but
the White Sox are the only team below you in any category.
Right. But how
I got to tell you, it's like you're last because they were not a big league team last year.
But how about just the ball in the gap with a couple of men on base where you score a couple of runs? Not even necessarily hit it out of the park. You need some extra base hits with men on base to score runs.
Well, you made a good point. I mean, the corner infield and the corner outfield the last few years, no wonder where you're so low in slug. I mean, that's where those guys come from, Jackson.
Right.
They haven't had the first baseman, the third baseman, and they've been trying to develop, haven't really had the corner outfielders that were boppers either.
Yeah, I mean, you were down there, and you saw that the game that James Wood had and how he was swinging, man. He had a slow start to the spring. For folks who weren't listening to all our, you know, early broadcasts, he wasn't on the field like the first week to 10 days of the spring. He had kind of a lingering left leg issue, some quad tendonitis. He had an MRI in the offseason. You were like, oh, man, this could be a problem. The first day, he just starts hitting line drives. I don't know that I've ever been as fooled calling a home run as one he hit in Jupiter. It was against the Marlins. It was a line drive that I thought was going to be caught by the left fielder. And it just kept going, and it never sank.
It would
and
not have hit the roof
the left
in this
field,
bar.
The left fielder thought he was going to catch the ball.
Yeah.
Then he turned to play the carom. Then the ball went over the fence, hit the back wall of the bullpen, and bounced. So it's a clear fence. It looked like he was on the warning track. He was rounding first, ready to jog into second for a double. He didn't know he had hit a home run.
It looked like it went through the wire fence. That's how hard
he was. It was a 16-degree launch angle. There was something like three home runs hit with a 16-degree launch angle all last season.
Stick aside, the video of that home run, it looked like it could have soared the entire way in this building.
Yeah.
Like, it would not have hit the roof right. of Los Rhino. It was crazy.
Yeah,
but
low,
what he's capable
drive.
Of, and we'll get to him when we break down the lineup, I'd say that was my biggest takeaway from my time in West Palm. As excited as I am and have been for James Wood, the conversations you have with Nats people about him, it's hard not to just get chills at the possibilities. Like, we're talking, if he reaches his ceiling, they think it's perennial MVP candidate.
Right.
Like
mm-hmm.
like a Judge, Stanton in his prime. You know, Soto's a different beast with the approach and the average and the walks. But
he's got a good approach. I mean, from day one last
yeah.
year, plate discipline was there.
Absolutely. I guess I mean more of strikeouts, swing and miss, whatever. But he's just big, so there's going to be a little bit of that.
Yep.
But he's got, it to your point, a great batter's eye. One of the other problems, I guess the elephant in the room, for the Nats trying to turn a bit of a corner here, is that the division is ridiculous.
Right. I mean, you almost can't even worry about the division. You just worry about how you play right now and then see where you are as you get into the season. Because You already know what those teams are.
Who do you guys think will be the best team?
I want to talk about that first. That's a fair point. The difference between when the Nationals climbed that hill the first time from the 08-09 losing 100
wasn't
games.
Good.
The division was terrible back then, so it was much easier to go from the bottom to the top.
Now you guys,
as they basically did in a 2-year period. Right. Now you've got to go through. You got to go a rung at a time almost because you have three legitimate heavyweights in your division. So that, but. Again, it's a little different schedule. You only play them 13 instead of 19 times. You have the third wild card. So in theory, if you play good enough baseball against everybody else and you know hold your own against them, you can have all the postseason. You can have four teams out of five go from the postseason. So you do have to worry about yourself.
And even with their record last year being the same, their record against teams in the division was better last year than it was atrocious before that.
So what do you mean?
Their record against the National League East.
So last year they dominated the Marlins. The Marlins had just eaten their lunch for 2 years in a row.
Right.
And the Nationals actually won the season series from the Braves, which was the first time since, I believe, 2017 or 2018 that they had won the season series from the Braves. But then the Phillies and the Mets dominated them. So it was almost like a wash. They were just slightly under 500 in the division. If you could somehow play close to 500 against the top three and still dominate the Marlins, then you're over 500 in the division. Do well against everybody else, you're in the mix.
Let's take the Nats out of the equation because you guys are calling their games. Of the other three and the likely front runners, who do you think ends up winning the East?
The Phillies, to me, are still the favorite with the pitching they have at the top of their through their starting rotation. Their bullpen is a little bit different at the back end this year. Kind of traded pitchers with Toronto to get their closer. But, you know, if they're healthy, offensively, position by position, they're the same team coming back that's just a year older. So it'll be interesting. I you know, on paper, position by position, to me, they're the best team in the division.
Yeah,
they have the fewest question marks.
I'm there, too. They added the Marlins' best pitcher. He's starting game two against the Nationals. And Mr. Lizardo, one-time Nationals draft choice, traded for Sean Doolittle. So Lizardo's starting game two. So they're deep, but their window is starting to, you know, they got a lot of expiring contracts this year.
Obviously,
I think the Braves are probably in a better position long term because they have everybody signed, and you know, the Mets have a player signed for a long period of time too. But yeah, I think for this year, the Phillies are probably the biggest threat to the Dodgers in the National League.
The Braves are my sneaky play, although I do think there's a real chance for some regression in the rotation. You got to keep Sale healthy.
Is Lopez going to do that again?
No way.
I'm not thinking that.
I think Schwellenbach's going to be a monster, though.
Yeah, but losing Fried?
That's big, no doubt. But I think they get Strider back, hopefully. I don't know when he comes back. But
yeah, soon. He's been pumping gas in spring training.
Absolutely. So, I mean, they've got some coming, some going. But the lineup's going to be way better. Acuna will be back 6 weeks or so from now. Albies got hurt last year. Harris got hurt. Riley was down. So I think they're being slept on a little bit.
Yeah, Murphy's down now.
Correct. Let's get to the lineup and some questions on the offense. We'll go through Abrams needing to bounce back, the outfield structure with the kids in left and in right. Charlie Slows, Dave Jagler, we are previewing opening day tomorrow in Washington, D.C. We are at the Lost Rhino Brew Pub on your home for Nationals baseball. This is Grant and Danny on The Fan.
If you have a locked AT&T phone, we're here with Bolt Cutters. T-Mobile will help pay off your locked phone and give you a new 5G phone for free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom. Via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax and a $10 device connection charge. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement as due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
down to Seth. Birdsong holding, kicking and delivering. A swing and a high fly ball to right field. This is deep. Encarnacion going back, way back. Warning track wall. It is gone! Goodbye! Bang! Zoom goes C.J. Abrams with a towering high fly ball home run over the big...
Charlie Slows and Dave Jagler will be calling Nats baseball games right here on The Fan all spring and summer long to kick off the Major League Baseball campaign, which begins with opening day coverage on The Fan tomorrow. We are live at Lost Rhino Brew Pub, and Charlie and Dave are joining us on site. Fellas, I want to talk about the lineup and some of the burning questions as it pertains to the Nats offensively going into the season. We mentioned C.J. Abrams last segment. Dave, let's talk about the 24-year-old shortstop. It feels like a year where he's got to make a leap. Last year ended in embarrassing fashion for him. He was not even on the ball club after getting in trouble off the field. But he played 2 months as a top five player in the sport statistically, literally. Two months he was an all-star, and he had a decent year overall based on those 2 months.
Yeah, consistency is the name of the game for him. I mean, there are peaks and valleys, and the peaks were high, but the valleys were low. So if you could flatten out the valleys, I mean, I think he's on the cusp, but definitely – a big season for him. And, you know, I sit there, you know, and you played a Charlie's call of an Abrams home run. I almost feel like if you wanted to put a little wager down, CJ swinging at the first pitch of the game tomorrow, 100% first pitch of the season, he's trying to go bridge on Zach Wheeler first pitch of the season tomorrow. You know, just maybe a little bit of better plate discipline. I think when he got in trouble last year, it's when he felt like he had to do too much. He's an aggressive hitter by nature, and there are a lot of guys like that in that lineup. But the months where he was a little more patient, I think that was the first month and the third month. Those are the months that he was better. If he's out there swinging at everything, that's when he tends to get himself in trouble. So, you know, hand in hand with consistency, to me, better swing decisions. And he's not the only. There are several hitters who need to improve that. And if they do, and I think we saw some progress in that this spring with a few players, but CJ. You know, he was very deep into the spring before he had a strikeout. He was making better swing decisions this spring. He needs to carry that over into the season.
Yeah, to back up that analysis with numbers, 11th percentile chase rate last year in baseball, right? So when he swings, he's actually league average at making contact. It's just that when you're swinging at the wrong pitches, it makes it that much more complicated.
But that was really the theme for the entire club in spring training, pitch selection, being more patient. K-Bit Ruiz, who has the unbelievable bat-to-ball skills about being selective and not chasing pitches and taking pitches till you get a pitch that you can drive. Same for, you know, that was Luis Garcia's problem for his first few years in the big leagues. That's how young these guys are adjusting to the big leagues. And, you know, where last year the theme was when Mike Rizzo had those signs put up, I don't care how hard, you know, you throw ball for. You know, he wanted nobody, pitchers to not walk people. And now the theme this year for the position players was a contest about, you know, that they had amongst the players, Dave, for swinging at good pitches and not chasing.
It was like a point system. You got points if you swung at a good pitch or took, you know, and you lose points if you swung at a pitch, chased it off the plate. And like Alex Call was lapping the field. I mean, Call had an amazing spring. He was like the MVP of the Grapefruit League in terms of walks to strikeouts. But, you know, that's something that I think could be contagious. And Ruiz, they were, you know, I've had a few people tell me they're expecting big things from him this year. I mean, he really took, and we talk about step sideways, he took a step backwards last year offensively, defensively. He came into camp in much better shape.
He's lost 18 pounds.
He looks better. He's moving a little bit better, you know, behind the plate. And they would have him in spring training just take. You know, it's a spring training bat. Just go up and take until to get used to watching pitches go by. Because you'd see him, you go, he made the decision to swing at that pitch before it was thrown. It's how you felt like when you watched it. But this spring, I was really impressed with him at least being, for him, much more patient. Not as patient as James Wood, but for him, you make the pitcher, you know, come into the strike zone. Because if the pitch is in the zone, he is capable of doing damage. He would just so often put a ball in play that was 6 inches off the outside. He's hitting it off the end of the bat, and you might flare a single to left, but more often than not, it's weak contact.
Yeah, they really think he showed a sign of maturity by being embarrassed by last season of his fall-off in performance. And he wanted to do whatever he could in the offseason to prepare to be better this spring. And so
He finished spring with an 830 OPS.
Good for him.
And three homers.
I mean, if you talk to Mike Rizzo, he'll take spring training results and just, you know, throw them out the window. He didn't care about the results.
The process that led to the results was pretty good.
Yes. Right.
For Ruiz. And he is, I'm glad you guys brought him up on the tail end of talking about Abrams, because fittingly, he'd be the next guy to highlight when it comes to needing to take a leap.
Absolutely.
For CJ, it is about the consistency where you've shown some of that star potential for parts of the season. But he could be a perennial all-star and a real legitimate MVP candidate if he were to put it all together one year and steal 50 bags and hit 27 homers playing shortstop on a first division Nats team. Ruiz is not that guy, but there is a huge difference between what he was a few years ago when he was hitting 260 and his OPS was in the mid-700s above league average, and he was hitting nearly 20 home runs. Mm-hmm. And last year, which was just, I mean, if we're being honest, he's not a good defensive player. He's never really going to be. So he needs to give you something offensively to make any of this work.
Yeah, I mean, his on-base and slugging, I mean, was barely cracking 600. I mean, it was not good. But this year, I think it's going to be a lot better. And just when we saw the lineups late in spring, he was down in line. I mean, how many times last year did Ruiz bat in the four spot or the five spot? And obviously he wasn't giving a lot of production. If he can give you that production he did 2 years ago hitting in the 7-8 spot, then you're a lot deeper lineup. And for this team to be good, you've got to be strong up the middle. They're going to be strong defensively in center field. Garcia improved defensively at second. You know, Abrams was more consistent defensively early in the year last year than he was the year before. If Ruiz can just, you know, can just improve slightly defensively, then you're going to be stronger up the middle. And I think he'll give you some production at the bottom of the lineup.
Yeah, it's a really important year for him. And you mentioned Luis Garcia. Last year was a breakout year. He finished runner-up with Silver Slugger Award for second base in the National League. And if you think back to spring training of last year, he was being run for the job. They told him the job's not yours. You got to win it. And yet, Trey Lipscomb hitting 400 and playing a lot of second base in spring. And Louis was given the job, and then he ran with it and had a great year. Can he do it again? Because now the league's going to make adjustments. And you know, he's got so much talent. He can hit the ball out of the park, foul pole to foul pole. So we'll see. And the key for him is how much better I think that he was defensively last year and has looked again this spring. He came up at 19 in 2020 when after COVID and the Nats had injuries and they didn't have the depth of roster, and he wasn't ready. He probably didn't deserve to be in the big leagues at that point, but he was. And so he's been in the big leagues ever since outside of the, 2 months at the end of 2 years ago when they sent him down.
And then they had that dreadful shortstop experiment.
Yes.
Right. I almost forgot about that.
We buried that one deep in our,
yeah, that's
our
what
soul.
How was that left side of the infield with him? And
Michael Franco.
Yes.
Not a whole lot of balls got fielded cleanly.
Well, I don't think the lefties like Patrick Corbin were. That's why he became a fly ball pitcher.
Right. Said anything on the ground is a base hit. Charlie Slows and Dave Jagler with us as we're previewing the Nats season.
He said, I better pitch up.
Let's move to the outfield. I was hopeful that they were going to go get a bopper to play right and then move Cruz to center just to improve the offense. Because people forget, but the reason Dylan Cruz, frankly, was a can't-miss draft prospect as a number two overall pick is because he could be a plus center fielder. Now, I'm not telling you that being a gold glove caliber right fielder is invaluable, because it is, but obviously you just referenced up the middle means a little more. But for the moment, what they've decided to do is Cruz is going to play premium defense and right. We saw it all spring long, by the way. Ooh, yep. He is sterling out there. Jacob Young, who could lead the team in steals and who is outstanding defensively, should have won a gold glove last year in center. And James Wood will play every day, set it and forget it. Don't worry about him. Let him learn the left field spot. Do you think that's the outfield triumvirate for the whole year with Robert Hassel trying to push? They've got other outfield prospects that are really good in the system, kind of sneaky guys like Dalen Lyle and
Andrew Pinckney.
Andrew Pinckney's a baller who had a good spring. If we fast forward to September, is it still Jacob Young in center? Or do you think there's a way one of those guys cracks the outfield spot and Cruz moves over?
I think it's up to Jacob
Young.
Yeah,
I hope so. I mean, I know you're a huge JY fan, Grant.
Yeah,
so
I love him.
I'd like to see him, you know, work on the swing improvements he attempted to make this offseason. Let's hope that carries over. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see him draw a few more walks. I mean, last year he only drew 30 walks as an everyday guy, you know, kind of the second leadoff spot, 9. If he can get the walks up to 50, get the on-base percentage, you know, in, even in the 323-30 range with that speed, walks are doubles for him. So if he can get, again, better swing decisions, you know, the league kind of, you know, he's not the guy that's going to hit over the fence. You know, they were pounding him. They were pounding him in. So if he can make them pay for that, at least to get, you know, hit some doubles, get some hits, then maybe the pitchers have to expand the zone. Then he draws more walks. I mean, nobody feared Jacob Young last year. So why are you going to walk him? You're going to, you know, put the ball over the plate. What's he going to do at most? Hit a single. So right. if those swing changes can come to fruition with the defense he plays, he's going to be tough to unseat. Now, can we predict what's going to happen with Mr. Hassel? With what we saw in the spring, if Hassel's hitting 330 and playing healthy baseball 3 months from now, it's going to be tough to keep him out of the big leagues.
So this is my question then, Charlie. And I don't know if this is realistic, but just hypothetically. Jacob Young's adjustments work, and he's playing pretty well. But Jacob Young, a former seventh-round pick, was not a high-end prospect in the system. I love the guy. I think he's a great player. But his ceiling is whatever it is. Hassel, when they acquired him in the Soto deal, was viewed as someone who could really help you at the big league level. If he's hitting 315 at Rochester with power and he's healthy and it's, you know, mid-June, I guess my question is, does how Jacob Young is playing matter more than how Hassel is playing?
Well, Hassel's got to prove he can stay healthy and play every day.
Right.
And produce the numbers that you just mentioned.
Which he has not done, to
right.
be fair.
Right. It's not... You know, the makeup of your club, probably you have Rosario can play left field if they need him to.
He could stand in left field with a glove.
Right.
That means play left field.
I don't think you see a lot of that at the Alex Call as your all-purpose play all three outfields. I mean, it's not inconceivable either at some point, depending what you do with the roster, that Hassel and Young could platoon. One's left-handed, one's right-handed. You know, or does Hassel come up to play? It really depends. Like you said, if one guy's tearing the cover off the ball and the other guy's struggling, I mean, if you're Jacob Young, what we saw most of last year, in particular the second half of the year, opponent's outfield defense was playing him like a right-handed extreme pull hitter the opposite way. The right fielder is playing like pitchers used to bat, almost on the right field line. Because that was his power field was right field.
The great thing about Jacob Young, though, I mean, with all the outfield prospects you named and the guys who are here and the guys who are knocking on the door, Jacob Young got here first.
Right.
He won the job.
Oh, yeah.
So someone's going to have to take that away from him for him to not be the guy.
And, you know, and he does two things
right.
very, very well. He is an elite defensive player, yeah. and he is an elite runner.
Right.
He can steal bases, and he can play plus defense. I don't want to say offense is a bonus, but offense is kind of a bonus.
If he can draw some walks,
yes,
and you know, hit north of 260, he's not going to lose that job.
Here's another thought about this, you know, Lyle, Hassel, Pinckney, second wave of outfielders. The Nationals haven't had this kind of depth of talent where if they had to go get somebody from the minor leagues, that you're bringing up somebody who's got all these skills, speed.
Right.
Power, you know, whatever it is.
Pinckney's a good-looking kid, huh?
Well, say he pushes and Young struggles. Maybe it's not Hassel. Whatever you do, Cruz might move to center. And Pinckney comes up right. But the other thing is, I had breakfast with several different scouts staying in the same hotel, and you find out we really like – scouts are like, we're really watching your second wave of outfielders. We don't have anyone like that.
Oh, yeah, there's no way they're all with this organization in a year or two.
Hey, and people talking about Nassim Nunez with the spring that he had.
Yep.
I mean, he's a major league shortstop defensively right now, and he shortened his swing a lot. You know, but no matter what he did, he wasn't pushing C.J. Abrams out.
He had a redshirt year last
right.
year. If he goes and puts up numbers at AAA, there are going to be a lot of people calling
right.
about Nassim Nunez.
Right. Right.
Well, if he goes and puts up numbers at AAA, I want him in the big leagues
right.
here.
Right.
I mean, that's a 70 runner and a 70 glove.
Right.
And maybe CJ's at a different spot.
Right.
Exactly.
Well,
CJ could
move. If CJ's in a different spot, the Padres played him in the outfield.
Correct. That's interesting. CJ, let's say CJ stays, just in this hypothetical, Luis Garcia could look for work elsewhere too. I mean, there's
yes.
a lot of different options,
well,
right? But
you didn't. I love
when you're GM on the radio.
Yeah,
right.
there you
but,
go.
But
exactly.
If you're Mike Rizzo,
I'm just moving families, man.
If you're Mike Rizzo, going back in the last couple of years, what did you have to make a trade?
No, you had
other teams want it.
It's finally happening.
You have lots.
Yeah.
Because they're like you said, they're not all going to be able to play for you. There's only 8 position player spots.
Want to get into some pitching questions with Charlie Slows and Dave Jagler. They are ready to get back in the booth. Opening day is tomorrow. We are getting closer and closer to the first pitch of 25. We're celebrating a new Nat season. Lost Rhino Brew Pub in Ashburn. You're listening to your flagship home of Nationals baseball. 106.7 The Fan.
Irvin with six strikeouts. He's ready. The windup, the 1-2 pitch on the way. Swing and a miss. He blew it by him up and out of the zone at 94. Strikeout number 7 for Jake Irvin. He has finished 7 one-hit shutout innings here on the 4th of July.
That's the voice of Dave Jagler. That was one of my favorite games of last year. Jake Irvin walking off the mound. Now, he actually told us in spring training with his big Michael Phelps outside the pool gold medal winning primal scream, but he went nuts. He said he actually cost himself a chance at a complete game because he thought he had enough in the tank. And then after that, he got back and he was kind of seeing the stars a little bit. And he's like, oh, no. He just shot everything he had left in the gun.
But then we would have been denied Derek Law riding in the bullpen cart with the American flag on the 4th of July, which was awesome.
We brought that up to him, and he's like, you know what? It's probably a good thing.
And it's a good thing Law got the save because if you have that entrance and then you – you don't get it done, then it's – but it was a it was a perfect day.
Law told us he wants a bobblehead.
You know what we need to tell about Jake then? If he used all his emotion to scream, we tell him that's okay because Ramon Ortiz lost his energy for a no-hitter by hitting a home run.
Yeah, that's true.
Labor Day 2006.
That's right. If not for the home run, he probably has a no-hitter.
Absolutely.
Which would you rather have? Yeah, but Law, who's a hilarious guy, said to us in spring training, he's like, I actually really thought I was going to get my first bobblehead with the flag and everything, which actually would have been great. But I guess not surprisingly, Derek Law did not make the cut this year for the bobblehead.
Generally, middle relievers, not big bobblehead candidates. But
I can't call this an annual tradition. What is every other year? Is that semi-annual?
Biannual?
Biannual. I never know if that's like twice a year. We'll go semi-annual.
Okay.
Charlie, 2 years ago, we had you read a bunch of things that the kids are saying now. I want you to do this again with some of the new terms that the kids are using, if you don't mind. So, ladies and gentlemen, Charlie Slows.
Which one do you want me to pick?
All of these.
All of these?
Yes.
All
using the kids' terms to talk about the Washington Nationals.
Jacob Young could low-key win a gold glove, no cap.
What do you think that means?
I think he'd win a gold glove, no problem.
No problem. All right. No cap is no lies detected. Like, dead serious.
Okay. No problem would be serious.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm in my Dylan Cruz era. I'm in my Dylan Cruz sweatshirt.
That's true. That, by the way, the new City Connect colors are beautiful.
Yeah.
That sweatshirt you're wearing is awesome.
It is awesome.
You can see it on the 106.7 The Fan YouTube page right now.
I'm in my Dylan Cruz era. Well, then you're like a top draft pick, right? You're going to be a star.
I honestly don't know what that one means. I'm not young enough. I think it means, like, your sights for Dylan Cruz this year.
James Wood is goated. That means he's chance to be a greatest of all time.
Right. I think that one's easy.
C.J. Abrams has aura. Does he have an aura ring?
I don't think that's what that means. I think that's
he has
like,
an aura about him.
There's
the way
a
he goes. Yeah, the way he goes about himself. Let Gore cook. Let him throw gas.
I'll take that.
Jake Irvin has great drip. Would that be his breaking ball?
Definitely isn't. No, most certainly it's not.
That's great drip. Is it coffee? I don't know. Is it good drip coffee?
That means he dresses well.
See, I would have had that for C.J. Abrams. Yeah. Great drip. The vibes in the Nats clubhouse are immaculate. Of course, they're great.
That's easy.
Yeah. Striking out is my ick.
What do you think?
Well, we all know ick is not a good thing.
In this case, ick is a wonderful thing.
Striking out is my – if you were a hitter, I would have thought, striking out my ick would be bad. And ick is like grosses you out.
All right, here we go.
Davey understood the assignment. That could mean a lot of things.
Just means like Davey knew what he had to do.
Okay. The new City Connects are straight fire. That's easy. Right? The way they look. The food at Nats Park slaps.
What do you think that means?
Well, he gave him his own sound effect.
He
there,
did,
too.
Slaps.
Slaps. What does slaps mean?
I don't know. It hits you upside the head. It's that good. It slaps you.
Exactly.
The taste is so good.
It's a just, banger.
It's a slap. Ballpark glizzies hit different. I don't know what a glizzy is. The lights?
You don't know what a glizzy is?
No.
What's if you're glizzy? Eating a glizzy, what are you eating?
I don't know. Something sounds like it'd be something cold.
It's a hot dog.
Okay, I was wrong. Did you know these, or did you have to look these up beforehand?
No. These are, well, they were provided by our young staff.
Oh, okay.
But these are, I have heard these terms. Let's do one more here. How about this one?
Luis Garcia has W Riz. That's how you read that, right? W Riz?
Correct, yeah.
That one I have
not Mike Rizzo.
No, it's not
Mike Rizzo, right?
Riz, he's got charisma.
W Riz is a W.
W is like a wing, okay, right? He's got good Riz. Jags, Bob Carpenter,
yes.
Final year. Mensch, great to have around the ballpark. Kind of love that he's going to get the send-off this season.
Yeah, Bob is awesome. I mean, it's, you know, we came in the same year in 2006. I knew Bob before that. We crossed paths in basketball. Just, you know, a lot of guys have pretty big egos in this business. Bob is one of the most selfless, caring individuals that you'll come across in this business. So a great friend, and I'm just, you know, glad that he, you know, is going to get to spend the time that he wants with his grandkids are going to be around with him. And, you know, 20 years with the Nats, awesome, and over 40 years doing big league baseball. Just to tell you what a pro he is, when he worked at ESPN and they would bring in a new analyst, you know, a former manager, former player, their first game in the booth, they would always pair him with Bob Carpenter.
No way.
He was the break-in guy.
What a
because
great compliment.
He is so awesome to work with, and he's just, you know, it wasn't about him. It wasn't about, hey, I got to be the star doing this. He would go out of his way to make the analyst, you know, for TV, the analyst is the star of the show. And so, you know, for a guy who was a break-in, you know, let Bob do the nuts and bolts, and he'll set you up and you follow along. That just speaks to how great he is to work with.
People don't remember the first, like, college football scoreboard show that ESPN ever did. Bob was the host in the studio for ESPN. I mean, he did a lot of different things. When I was a year out of college and went to St. Louis, Bob was the big soccer announcer for the St. Louis Steamers indoor soccer. This was before he got involved with the Cardinals in Major League Baseball. So I've known Bob since 1984.
Wow.
And I remember when I went to Tampa Bay to do baseball and I left the Bullets, Bob was just starting out with the scorebook. And he goes, what do you think? Tell me what you think. What changes? What would you change? What, you know, so some of the things in there we had talked about, I said, well, I'd like more room for this. And more, you know, pretty much maximize the pages for what you can get on them. And his book gets you, 15 innings, right? Nobody else's scorecard or scorebook.
No,
200 games, which is perfect. If you do 15 spring training, 162, and about 20 postseason games, we fit the entire 2019 season in a book all the way to Game 7 of the World Series.
Actually,
we did a spring training game. I don't know if you were there. There were three plays. There was a caught stealing with an error. There was a strikeout pass ball. And there was a sack fly where Altuve dropped the ball.
Yes.
So you had three plays in the game where the scoring was an out, where no out was recorded. I'm like, we're immediately referencing Scorebook Bob. So he's got this whole second, you know, social media persona career because if something wacky happens.
Because people would then.
Hey, Bob, how do you score this?
On Twitter. And
so Altuve drops a fly ball with a runner at third. He was going to tag up and score. So it's a sack fly,
E7.
But it's a sack fly E7 because Altuve dropped the ball and a second run scored. So you score it sack fly E7.
And I was
we got to have Scorebook Bob on.
I have to ask him probably once a homestand about something that catch up on something that happened. How did you score that? He'll take it out right there and show you the scorebook. I want to get to some burning pitching questions and some predictions as we wrap up our Nats preview special out here at Lost Rhino Brew Pub in Ashburn. If you're in the area, stop by. Charlie Slows, Dave Jagler hanging out. I'm Grant Paulson. It's G&D on the Fan.